Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction, Text 37. Tam jagam siddha karmanam isam sam nirapatrapam asudeva mahabhaga vacha parishantrayan. Translation. Wanting to pacify Kamsa, who was so cruel and envious that he was shamelessly ready to kill his sister. The great soul Vasudeva, who was to be the father of Krishna, spoke to him in the following words. Purport. Vasudeva, who was to be the father of Krishna, is described here as Mahabhaga, a very upright and sober personality. Because although Kamsa was ready to kill Vasudeva's wife, Vasudeva remained sober and unagitated. In a peaceful attitude, Vasudeva began to address Kamsa by putting forward reasonable arguments. Vasudeva was a great personality because he knew how to pacify a cruel person and how to forgive even the bitterest enemy. One who is fortunate is never caught, even by tigers or snakes. Om Gyanachamadandasya Gyananjana Chalakya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudevaya Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare, Hare. Who could ever conceive of there being such a terrorist tragedy about to be performed on a wedding day? We have lots of weddings in this community, and more even coming. What bride and groom would dare ever imagine such a terroristic tragedy about to happen right after the wedding? This is actually the day after the wedding. So what is the scene? I like to refer to this part of Krishna Leela, this particular scenario, as death on a wedding day. You have combined the two most extreme events. Generally, on a wedding day, you know what the emotions are. Not simply of the bride and groom, but for everyone attending. It's like all the hopes for happiness in relationships, all the hopes that the material world can somehow want to become a nice place. All those hopes just bubble over on the wedding day. Those of you who are married, you can remember your wedding day, the hopes, the dreams. Now everything is going to be all right. Now there'll be a sense of completion. All obstacles will be overcome. By our combination, we will attract happiness and beat back all distress. Yeah? So all these emotions are just bubbling over on the wedding day. As I said, it's not simply the bride and groom, but all those who are attending, they get caught up in all that. Often, unscrupulous men, which are most of them in Kaliyuga, make a plan to attend weddings and then prey on single ladies, because at weddings, single ladies are very sentimental and just... And so the unscrupulous men key on the desires of the unmarried ladies that, oh, I should be happy too, and when will mine come? And so, these devious men, they attend weddings just to manipulate and exploit. So there are all kinds of things going on in weddings. So, let's look at this particular situation of the wedding of Vasudeva and Devaki. Technically, you're looking at the day after the wedding, and now it's time to for the bride to go to the home of the husband. It's a very emotional scene because the father is releasing his daughter. This is hard to understand in Western culture, but if you ask any Indian families, which holds the traditions, when they're handing over the daughter for marriage, when she's actually leaving home upon the marriage, the night before, the whole family gets together and cries. Maybe it's happened to some of you here. You don't have to say it, but the whole family gets together and cries because the daughter is effectively leaving the father's family and joining the husband's family. That's the tradition. So, this is happening to Devaki, and her father has given her such an extraordinary dowry. That's the Vedic tradition, as you know, that the woman never inherits her father's property. So someone might cry out, discrimination, male chauvinism. But you see, at the time of her marriage, the father loads her up with wealth. So in that way, you could say things balance out. And also, from the Vedic point of view, it's not the contemporary point of view we know, but from the Vedic point of view, the woman's wealth is children. And the man can't directly generate that wealth. in that the man, of course, can't directly have children. Devaki's father, flowing over with affection. The verse 31-32 describes that. Duhitri Vatsala, he was very fond of his daughter. Psychological studies have been done which reveal that when men have daughters, they're more generous. Even more so than just being married to a woman. The ranking is this way. Man by himself is very selfish and self-centered. Spends all his money on his boy toys and hanging out with his mates. Man with a woman, psychological studies show, when he's married, he becomes softer and he's more generous. And then man with a daughter, his heart chakra is really open wide. So, King Devaki, the father of Devaki, he was very fond of his daughter, Duhitri Vatsala, and therefore he loaded her up with wealth. Wealth that, of course, is not according to the current standard. He didn't give her piles of electronic or paper money. He gave 400 elephants, nicely decorated with golden garlands. That's real money, golden garlands. He gave 10,000 horses, 1,800 chariots, and 200 very beautiful young maidservants, fully decorated with ornaments. So those ornaments, that's wealth. And all the horses, 10,000 horses, they're all decorated. 1,800 chariots, all decorated with gold and jewels. So this is natural wealth. And then he made sure that his daughter would not be overwhelmed with housework. Every married lady's delight. Yes, housework. Also, according to psychologists, when in the traditional family, even in the traditional Western family, which of course is fast disappearing, when ladies do housework, they feel a sense of control over the world. They're making their house perfect, they're tidying it up, putting everything in order, so that way they actually are said by psychologists to become more peaceful because they feel this much is under my control, this much is under my thumb. In my emotional palace, everything is going on okay. this is just researching psychologists. What do I know? So, Devaki, King Devaki, gave his daughter 200 very beautiful young maid servants. and they were all fully decorated. Now, meanwhile, what is Kamsa doing? Kamsa is described in the Shastra as the sister of David. Actually, they're cousins. But in the Vedic family system, you've heard the term cousin brothers. So similarly, she's the daughter of Kamsa's uncle, but still in the Vedic system, that relationship is so close, it's described as brother-sister. Now, just see, Kamsa's, it seems like he's not so bad completely, right? He wants to please his sister. Text 30 says, Priya Chikirshaya, to please her on the occasion of her marriage. This is a very important point, because sometimes our devotees say, why so much criticism of materialists? I know some nice ones, and they seem to have good qualities. Yes, that's true. But we're going to see what happens when the so-called superficial, when the so-called good qualities, which are superficial, they're on the surface, what happens to them when they're under pressure of self-interest? So Kamsa, the son of King Ugrasena, in order to please his sister Devaki on the occasion of her marriage, he took charge of the reins of the horses. He became her chariot driver. Because as you heard from the Shastra, no doubt the girl is going to be feeling separation from her father as she goes for the first time. They haven't been living together, by the way. Vasudeva and Devaki. You have to put everything into the contemporary context here. Because you'd be thinking, what's the big deal? I mean, you know. They've been associated at least a few years, and so what's the big drama? There's no, what's the mystery? But this is the Vedic system in which the woman is never alone with a man until marriage. That used to also sort of be the system in the Western world. There's no question of any living together, what to speak of any intimacy. That's all finished now, of course, and you're considered strange if you don't live together before marriage. And in fact, as we know here in New Zealand, for the general population, you're considered a bit strange if you marry. So, Devaki has her cousin, brother, Kamsa, and he's doing his duty, and he's doing it out of affection, even though he's such a terrorist demon. He's driving her and her new husband to their home so that she will be in contact with some close relative as she's going to this new universe. Try to understand what's going on. She's never been out of her father's house. She's always been under the protection of the father. That means no loitering here and there, no going to parties, no going to movies. Now for the first time, she's leaving her father's protection and going to her husband's home. So it's a very emotional scene. As I said before, traditional Indian families will tell you that the night before the wedding, the whole family gets together with the daughter and cries. So, now you see Kamsa driving the chariot. In his left hand are the chariot reins. In his right hand is a whip for controlling the horses. So everything seems to be proceeding wonderfully, royally, festively. Conch shells, bugles, drums, and kettle drums all vibrating concert for their auspicious departure. Then what happens on the way? Still think, still visualize, Kamsa in the chariot, left hand holding the reins, right hand with the whip in his hand, and suddenly, an unembodied voice calls out. Now, what does the Shastra mean when it says an unembodied voice or disembodied voice? It means that it's a demigod who's hidden. It doesn't mean the voice has no body. Voice has always got bodies, some kind of body, gross or subtle. So the disembodied or unembodied voice means the demigod was in a hidden vantage point. And he addressed Kamsa in a very provocative way, on purpose. He called Kamsa a Buddha, you foolish rascal. That was really to get on Kamsa's nerve and rattle his cage. You foolish rascal, the eighth child of the woman you are carrying will kill you. So what's going on? The demigod was afraid that Kamsa, at this marriage, continuation of the marriage event, was becoming too affectionate, was becoming too nice. So the demigod wanted to hurry up and accelerate the appearance of Krishna. So the demigod knew that the more terroristic Kamsa acts, especially toward Krishna's soon-to-be mother, the quicker Krishna will appear. So therefore the demigod, like Narada Muni, was doing his role to agitate the situation. So therefore he was sure to use strong language in addressing Kamsa. A Buddha, you fool thing, look what's going on. The eighth child of this woman that you're carrying, you're like a beast of burden, bearing your own killer. How crazy is that? Think about it, Kamsa. In other words, do something horrible. Stop trying to be affectionate. We know where you're really at. So, again, you're left to wonder, what happened to the affection of Kamsa? You're starting to understand that disconnected from Krishna, the so-called good qualities are in such a state of flux and like clouds in the sky, especially in the New Zealand sky. Just one gust of wind and the weather changes. Everyone knows it. One minute the sun is shining brightly, next minute clouds cover the sky, and the next minute sun is shining brightly. So similarly, everyone knows, you can't really so much depend on the weather. You just take it as it comes. So that's what that attitude is what the Shastra is trying to impart to you about the so-called good qualities of those disconnected from Krishna. They're there, but how can you depend on them? Especially in a world where everything is relative. That's what everyone thinks today. Oh, do what you feel is best. Try to be happy in your own way. Follow your own dream. Do as best as you can in the world the way it is. And it's not your fault, any problems. We didn't make the world like this. And just try to enjoy it as best you can. Try to help others to enjoy if it's possible. And what more is there to that? On Wednesday, at our workshop at the loft, we were asking our guests, why not be a zombie? They all had seen zombie movies, zombie TV shows. Why not? What's the difference? So they were really stunned for a while. Some of them said, well, but zombies, they eat flesh. I said, well, so do human beings. I'm sure some of the human beings in this room are flesh eaters, right? So again, what's the difference between a zombie and you? Well, zombies, they don't think, they just act like robots and they... I said, well... And then someone said, but a zombie's life has no meaning. I said, very interesting. Well, can you please tell me then what is the meaning of your life? Silence. I said, the zombie is better because the zombie is focused. A.K.A. Hakuru Nandana. The zombie has a central focus in life, and the zombie acts with determination for that focus. Furthermore, The zombie doesn't have to get into any existential crises. Who am I? Why am I here? Why am I miserable? And should I kill myself? The zombie doesn't have to do all that. So I explained to them, these are advantages from the material point of view, right? You don't have to worry about depression, you don't have to worry about anxiety, you don't have to worry about any neuroses. Just be a zombie. Zombies, they like human flesh, and particularly a major family of zombies likes human brains. So I said, please explain to me, why not be a zombie? Well, he really had to struggle. Yeah, why not be a zombie? Because if you say the zombie's life has no meaning, then it's the burden's on you to show that human life is superior because it has meaning. Now please tell me the meaning of human life. No one knew. Everything is relative, just to how you feel at the moment. So how then can you actually be said to have good qualities? That's the question the fifth canto of Bhagavatam asks. Yasya asti bhakti bhagavati akinchana sarvai gunaistattva samasate sura kalava bhaktasya kato mahaguna. Bhagavatam says, how could there, in the abhakta, this is not religious fanaticism. The Bhagavatam is presenting to you scientifically. How could there be any mahaguna, some great qualities in someone who's an abhakta? Why? Because they are simply in relation to the illusory energy. So that there can't be anything substantial. They're in relation to a shadow. Would you analyze a shadow for all the personal good qualities? Well, that's a nice shadow. That shadow is behaving so nobly. It's not worth it, because everything can change so quickly and there's no depth. There's no consistency. And people today will admit there's no consistency. You just have to make your own purpose in a purposeless universe. So I asked the people Wednesday, all right, you can't say what the purpose of universe is, so then why should your own life pretend to have purpose? Why not just be honest, straight up and down? The universe is purposeless, I'm purposeless. Just let things happen. Don't have any plans, don't have any career goals, don't have any ambitions. Be true all the way to your philosophy that everything is accidental, a random combination of chemicals. If you say the universe is purposeless, then act like that. Don't contradict yourself. And zombies do great in a purposeless universe. They don't have anxiety. They're driven to have human flesh. Zombies can't be killed unless you whack them on the head, although they're gradually decomposing. So similarly, the human body is gradually decomposing. So this way, let us try to understand when the fifth canto says, halava bhaktasya kato mahaguna. Where can be the good qualities? Because sometimes we get a little upset, a little, it sounds a bit extreme, a bit fanatical. Fundamentalist. But you have to understand scientifically. The so-called good qualities are on the mental platform. It's like saying, this is a nice shadow, this is a bad shadow. It has no substance. So the Bhagavatam standard of good qualities is much more substantial and deep than the so-called good qualities you see in someone who is caught in the grips of the illusory energy. You would say, this is a good zombie, this is a bad zombie. Let's now
Studying at the university, a one-year course. What is good zombie behavior?
You wouldn't wait to die doing that.
So we have to understand the perspective of the Bhagavatam.
It's not fanatical.
Once you understand that there's an illusory energy, and there's a spiritual energy, and that whatever is caught up in the illusory energy is always spoiled, sooner or later. And there's no depth there, there's no consistency, there's no substance. So easily you can be compromised. I always ask persons at workshops, I won't ask you, don't worry. But you can remember some time in your life when even your so-called personal principles and codes of honor that you had somehow other fashioned for yourself or received from your parents, you can remember a time in your life when you took leave of them. When you looked the other way and, well, you know, things happen, you gotta do what you gotta do, who knows? Everyone can remember. So this is what the Shastra means. Where is the truly, where are the truly good qualities? Which are rock solid, core deep, non-changing. So now, let's watch what happens to Kamsa. He hears that voice of a hidden demigod calling him a fool. And he's going to immediately take action. Now, how is Devaki feeling when she hears that voice? She's happy because she knows her brother Kamsa is such a terrorist. And Vasudeva had already tipped Devaki off that when Vasudeva was born, his mother told him that his future marriage would bring about the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that Supreme Personality of Godhead would finish Kamsa. So Vasudeva already tipped Devaki off about that. So when she heard that disembodied voice from the sky, she was jubilant. It's true, it's going to happen. So now, Kamsa. Kamsa was a condemned personality in the Bhoja dynasty because he was envious and sinful. Therefore, upon hearing this omen from the sky, he caught hold of his sister's hair with his left hand and took up his sword with his right hand to sever her head from her body. This is a wedding? Just see, remember, in the left hand he had the reins of the chariot, in the right hand he had the whip for controlling the horses. He drops the reins, grabs her hair, and with his right hand reaches for his sword and is ready to chop her head off. Now, how shameful is that? Think of the situation, the festive wedding occasion. You can understand there have been wedding feasts, there have been all sorts of auspicious celebrations, music, poets, drama. And now this? Just see, he didn't even make a scheme to kill her secretly with poison. Right then and there, he's ready to chop off her head in full view of her family members. So again, where are the good qualities? It makes you think. When it comes to protecting your self-interest, you change, or you show your real colors. Now you may say, well, we know people, even in this age of Kali, who have done heroic sacrifices for other people, even giving up their own life. But if you look at their life, because there's no knowledge there, you'll always find some discrepancy. Someone will sacrifice their life to save human beings, or save one human being, after spending a whole lifetime of participating in animal slaughter. There's always some major discrepancy, because you don't know the whole picture. So you're kind to the human beings that you know, and you're horrible to the animals. There's always some major problem. because you don't know the whole science. Here's Kamsa now. So shameful. But from the modern point of view, if you take it to its conclusion, if you take that modern point of view to the conclusion, Kamsa is, he's just, it's self-protection. He's heard that the eighth child of his sister David, he's going to kill him. So he, in some ways, according to some visions, you would praise Kamsa for executive precision. He didn't mess around. Look, everything is material. We're all materialists. She's going to have a kid that's going to kill me. I kill her now. No worries. So you would actually, in the age of Kali, you would sort of think that Kamsa is very executive, a preemptive strike. That's what the USA calls when they knock out some foreign country. They're about to do something, mass weapons of destruction. We're going to get them first and benefit the whole world. We're going to give them democracy and we'll take their oil. Executive precision. So that's what Kamsa's showing you. He's not wishy-washy. He said, look, if I'm a demon, I'm a demon. I may have my affectionate tendencies on a wedding day towards my sister. But the bottom line is, do what you gotta do to control and enjoy. So that's the principle we have to confront in ourselves. This selfish desire to control and enjoy. This is what gives us problems. And sometimes, as our time in devotional service goes on, we start to imperceptibly, unconsciously, and then we become more conscious of it, start to develop this resentment. Krishna, I haven't controlled and enjoyed in a long time. What are you going to do about it? How long can I go on like this? It's been X amount of months or X amount of years I have not controlled and enjoyed sufficiently. I've set that aside just to serve you, Krishna. So resentment starts to develop in us. And then you see that sometimes our bhakti practitioners just suddenly do something very strange. Because they just get overwhelmed with this resentment. I haven't enjoyed and controlled. I gotta do something. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yashastra Vidyam Utsucha, Vartate Kama Karata, Nasa Siddhanta Vapnoti, Sukhamna Paramji. This becoming overwhelmed by lust, and you have to understand the full depths of that lust. It's the desire to be the controller and enjoyer. When that overwhelms you, you just suddenly throw all your knowledge away, throw all your vows away, and just, it's going to be me and the material energy. We're going to get it together. So Krishna warns you in Bhagavad Gita. He warns us that Nasukam, you won't be happy. Nasasiddham Abhavanokti, you'll never attain the perfection of life. By this whimsical behavior. Now, think about that word whimsical, because in the purports of that verse of the Gita, Prabhupada expands upon it. Children, you know, act whimsically. Just do, you would call, dumb stuff. I remember, my brother just reminded me of this. I had forgotten completely about it. But I think I was 14, I was 12. He was 10 and a half. His sister was probably 6. And so my mother, she's working hard, and Easter was coming. For those of you who don't know, you're from India. Easter in the Western world is not simply a religious holiday. It's things like chocolate Easter bunnies and jelly beans. So, my mother, working hard, going to university at the same time, or working full time, she went out of her way to get a big supply of jelly beans for her children, four children, so that, you know, we could have them on Easter. So, the way my brother tells the story, one day my brother, he said he did something stupid, and according to my vision, so I just opened a bag of jelly beans, big bag, I just took out one jelly bean and just threw it at him. And the next minute that started a whole jelly bean war amongst the kids. They all ripped open the bag and just throwing jelly beans at each other. My six-year-old sister was into it. So the whole living room and dining area was just covered with, you know, jelly beans. We were just throwing them at each other. And then the door opens and mother comes home from work. She just sat down on the couch and cried. Oh, I sacrificed so much. I wanted my kids to be happy on Easter with jelly beans. And now they're just throwing jelly beans at each other. Not only that, but I have to clean it up. So, this is whimsicals. Parents know you walk out the door for a half hour, come back, and you find your little kid has smeared ketchup or mustard over the walls. Why did you do that? But adults live the same way. And sometimes this whimsicalness affects even our devotees. Why did you do that? What were you thinking when you did that? I always ask that to devotees who get themselves in hot water. What were you thinking when you did that? And generally they say, well, I wasn't thinking, or I just lost control of my senses. I just wanted to do it. So that's why Krishna warns us in Bhagavad Gita about this tendency. It's like, probably this is a man's example. You have a car with a powerful engine, and you just think, I just like to open up, you know, just go as fast as I can, without worrying about the consequences. My father would do this all the time because he was administrating New York City Police Department, so he knew if he'd get flagged down by a traffic cop, he'd just show his badge and he'd say, hey, don't worry about it. Now, good one, have a good time. So he just explained that, you know, I just want to get out on the road and just, you know, put the pedal to the metal, you know, and really I just feel what it's like, you know? So he was, because he was a police official, he'd get away with it. But you try to do the same thing, and of course, you'd be caught by the police. So we have to beware of this whimsical tendency in us. I just want to floor the pedal. I just want to do it. I'm tired of being restrained and bound and shackled. I'll still believe in Krishna. Yeah, Krishna is the control enjoyer. Let him have the control and enjoyment, but I just want a little bit myself. What's the problem? It's actually a demoniac tendency. We have to face it. And Kamsa is showing that. Shamelessly, he wants to terminate his sister. Even though he's in public at a festive occasion, he's so envious. Now, what does envy fully mean? It doesn't simply mean that I can't stand your success. I can't stand the superior things that you do. Envy also means you should die for the sake of one, so I can live. That's envy. I live, you die. If you have to die to contribute to my living, so be it. It's the way life is. This is called Jiva Himsa. That is a main reason why we are so against animal slaughter. It's envy. But have you ever tried to get a meat eater to understand that their meat eating is an expression of envy? They don't see it that way. They can't see it. So Kamsa is showing graphically this envy. that lurks in all our hearts. I don't care that she's my sister. I'm going to take action and be preemptive strike. There'll be no problems. She's not going to give birth to an eighth child because she's going to die right now. So now Vasudeva swings in action. He's described as Mahabhaga, the great, the fortunate father of Vasudeva, the supreme personality. He knows how to present things. Now, how cool would you be in this situation? A man just married on his wedding day, and then you see your wife's brother about to chop her head off. But this is how self-controlled, this is how dear, and this is how expert Vasudeva is. He is the dream husband that ladies want. He's magnanimous, he's self-controlled, and he's expert too. He's very shrewd. So, he made his presentation to Kamsa. He did that in a very skillful way. So therefore, Prabhupada writes at the end of this purport we heard today, Vasudeva was a great personality because he knew how to pacify a cruel person and how to forgive even the bitterest enemy. One who is fortunate is never caught, even by tigers or snakes. So in the coming verses, you're going to hear Vasudeva's strategy for stopping Kamsa. He's going to use logic and reason. Six verses, he's going to present that death is inevitable. Why commit a sinful act just to save your life when we're all going to die anyway? And, okay, you want to enjoy, but you know, whatever enjoyment that your karma is supposed to bring you, you're going to get. So why commit sinful activities? Whatever enjoyment you do according to your karma, that's going to come to you. You're going to hear Vasudeva use techniques of agreement and presenting of problems. Kamsa, my dear brother-in-law, you are the pride of your family. He's puffing Kamsa. Great heroes, praise your qualities. How could such a qualified person as you do what? Kill a woman, number one. Number two, your own sister. Number three, another man's wife. Think about it, Kamsa. This is our expert, Vasudeva. He's presenting to Kamsa based on principles of relationship. It's your sister, the Bhoja dynasty, and then also in terms of gain. That's part of Vasudeva's presentation. Kamsa, think about the profit and loss. Now, how are you going to gain by this? We're all self-interested, Kamsa, right? Yeah. So what do you gain when your reputation amongst the Bhoja dynasty is destroyed? You don't want that, Kamsa. Think of the gain you'll get if you let her live. You'll be known as so charitable, even though you heard that voice from the sky. And later, Vasudeva is going to say, look, Kamsa, you know, who knows whether it's going to be an eighth child, or maybe no children at all, or... So in this way, Vasudeva is appealing to Kamsa. Think about your self-interest, how to gain. You can gain in reputation, Kamsa. Otherwise, you destroy your reputation. And then Vasudeva explained, you know, there's some problems with this course of action that you're about to do. You can cause problems for yourself, not only in this life, but also in the next life. Think about it, Kamsa. So in this way, the Acharyas analyze Vasudeva's presentation to Kamsa is very brilliant, multifaceted, and had many different aspects that Vasudeva was making in his PowerPoint presentation, shall we say. It's a real lesson in how to make a presentation in such a crisis situation. And this shows you what a great person Vasudeva is. Such self-control. You wonder, how could anyone be so cool and calm? But that shows you, indeed, great qualities. And indeed, Vasudeva is suitable to be the so-called father of Krishna. Although Krishna, of course, is unborn, he has no parents. But still, some devotees want to be the parents of Krishna, and so he gives them that relationship. Thank you very much, Adios.